CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and co-host Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. And we turn to India, part of the Quad, part of the future of the Indo-Pacific, and challenged by the People's Republic of China's military in the high Himalayas these many months and years now, a provocation that India has answered with a large deployment in the Himalayas, harsh conditions. The headline from Reuters, however, points to more difficulty ahead. India will start enrollment under new military recruitment plan this month. Lead line. Enrollment under India's new Armed Services Recruitment Plan will commence, top defense officials said, despite protests against a scheme that will drastically cut tenure and other fewer service benefits at the end of the contract. We welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies to help us understand why now a manpower drive and what this means, because there are protests in a country that I understand is deeply patriotic, especially when challenged along its frontiers by the People's Republic of China. Cleo, a very good evening to you. The protest part is what's surprising. Why protest? What is the Modi government proposing? Good evening to you.
Good evening. This is actually a very important initiative. Now, if you join the Indian military, it's sort of a career path for life. And you end up, you know, in there for a couple decades usually, and then you retire. And so this, what's being proposed now is that you join the Indian military for 4 years, which is actually quite familiar to American structures, for example. And after 4 years, 25% of those who had enrolled will stay on in the military. And the other 75% will get a lump sum payment to advance their studies or to start a business. And various states have said that they will hire a certain percentage of these four-year trained service personnel as police or in other capacities as well. So the idea is to get many more Indians, especially young Indians, 18 to 21, involved in the defense of their country, to get them trained, to instill more of a national psychology, and to then have this increasingly large workforce that has a sense of nation and discipline and has the ability to launch their life with a little bit of money to it. So it makes sense in a lot of different ways. It could have been better explained to the public. But the reasons for the demonstrations are many. Some of them involve other countries, perhaps, not wanting the Indian military to become younger, fitter, and stronger, and for there to be this essentially large reserve force on call at any time. That doesn't help countries that want to break up India or undermine it. Another is that there's currently a very important political issue that's going on, which is the investigation of the Gandhi family, in particular Rahul Gandhi, who's the son of assassinated Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi, and who is a leader in the Congress Party, being brought in on potential money laundering charges. And this is a big, big issue for that party, because if these corruption charges are proven, it'll strike a blow at the family that has been controlling that party for a very long time.
Gordon, I have a question for Cleo.
Cleo, how is the Congress Party doing in general?
It's not doing well, in part because this family, the Gandhi family, so it's Rahul and his sister Priyanka and his mother Sonia Gandhi, who is born in Italy and then came to India and married Rajiv, have held the party like a fiefdom for generations. This is he is the grandson of a prime minister of Indira Gandhi, a great grandson of Nehru. This is a generational ownership of a political party, and they can't give up control because there's so many skeletons in their closets that if they give up control of the party, they're likely to go down. In fact, their entire coterie, and they have elements of it in state parties and across the economic system. And, you know, it's a whole allegedly criminal organization as much as a political party. At least that's what it seems to be in terms of these charges. So they've been holding on to this party, and that's made them less and less popular politically. But for their own survival and liberty, they can't give up control.
This protest, you said it was in the north and the east. Are these the regions that are on their ways to the Himalayas? In other words, are these the regions that are most threatened?
There have been protests kind of a little bit all over. They're really cracking down now. I mean, the one thing that happened was the government said, if we see that you're involved in these protests, you're not going to be part of these schemes. We're not going to bring you into this project. So the government is saying, if you are willing to act in an anti-nationalist fashion now, we don't think you're a good candidate for this for this national initiative to increase the strength of the country. So I think that's dampened the ardor of a lot of the young rioters who may have been doing it for reasons other than deep political conviction, if I can put it that way.
And I think you suggested also, excuse me, Gordon, that there are bad actors from the outside involved in these protests. Does that mean China?
So it's hard to identify in that way at the moment. I would expect a lot of the social media stuff is being tracked. Pakistan, of course, also benefits from this. And giving the general image that India is unstable and things can get set on fire at any moment, that all plays into standard political warfare operations against India by what's called the Sino-Wahhabi lobby, to give the impression that India is not a good bet as a solid ally for, in particular, the other Quad partners, but for anybody else as well. So I see it largely as part of a political warfare operation, which is why it flared up. But the Indian government realized what it was and put the right steps in place. And it'll die down pretty quickly now, along with a good education program, making it clear what this project is actually about.
Gordon, you have a question for Cleo.
Cleo, you talked about the rejuvenation of the Indian military as an institution by changing its hiring patterns. Would a young Indian going into the bureaucracy, what kind of career path would they have? Would they have one of these lifetime appointments, essentially? I mean, is this endemic throughout the Indian government and Indian society as a whole?
Yes, these are, there are a lot of little pieces of kind of the Nehruvian type bureaucracy where these are sinecures for life. You know, that passing the government exams is a huge accomplishment. And then the idea is once you pass those exams and got the job, you're in those positions for life. So the idea of going in for just 4 years really is new. But in many ways, it looks like it has the potential to strengthen the country in ways that you would see somebody going into the U.S. military and serving 4 years and then coming out and being seen as somebody who is diligent and reliable and a good employee and somebody who cares about the nation. And so spreading that ethos across the not just bureaucracy, but the business sector and elsewhere. So I think the model is one of the reasons it's been so surprising for a lot of Indians is that it's a fundamental change in the relationship between the individual and state through employment. And I think it's probably well overdue.
The Congress Party, quickly. The suggestion of money laundering makes me ask a question that I didn't want to skip. Is China involved in anybody's theory of the compromise of the Congress Party?
Yes. So there's another corruption case against the son of Chidambaram, who was the finance minister and, in fact, the home minister for a very long time. And his son, and this also just came up within the last few months, has been accused of essentially speeding through visas for a bunch of Chinese nationals. So, yes, there's some very deep concerns about that as well.
Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, writing at Gatestone Newsweek in the Hill. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.